Hi, welcome to another episode of Django Chat. I'm Will Vincent with Carlton Gibson. Hey, Carlton.
Hello.
And we're very pleased to have Jacob Walls, our newest Django fellow. Welcome, Jacob.
Thanks. Hey, Will. Hey, Carlton. Really cool to be here.
No, thank you for coming on the show. We're very excited. Are we the first people to get you since you've been fellow?
So yeah.
Brilliant. We've got the inaugural fellow interview.
Nice. And thank you for being our first video guest, too. This is our first time having a guest on video. So
it's a vodcast now.
It's a podcast.
It's a what?
Yeah. A vodcast? Is that what you said?
I was doing a pull request review the other day, and there were these test models from 18 years ago, and there was a podcast class and a vodcast class. And I was like, Django Chat has graduated to vodcast.
Wow. Wow. Levels. Okay. All right. Well, let's, Carlton, top of mind, Django on the Med. That's next week.
Well, hang on. I think we should say that this episode is sponsored by Hacksoft, your Django development partner beyond code. More on their services later in the show.
Okay, thank you. Yes. And speaking of the your side of the Atlantic, Django and the Med.
Yes, so that's only a week away now, and I'm very excited. Breakfast is lined up. We've got stickers, we've got T-shirts being printed up. We've got everything. And Jacob, you're going to make it, aren't you?
I'll be there, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. Jealous. So how many people total, do you think?
I think we'll be in the 15 to 20 zone, which is nice because when Paolo and I started off, it was, well, we're going to be Paolo and I. Paolo and me sat there doing whatever. And so I think 15, maybe, a few more will sneak out the woodwork as the next guy. But that's a nice number. We can split into groups and there's a good number of experienced contributors, and there's a few brave souls who've not, coming along, and they've emailed out and they'll be like, are you sure? I'm like, absolutely. Very excited.
You have to take a picture. It only counts if you document it, right? You have to have a picture.
Yeah. We've got all sorts coming up. So it's going to be very good. But on the first day, we're going to do the roadmap, the road mapping workshop that we talked about. We've got a Django birthday party for the second day. And then on the third day, I'd like to do a kind of roundup, what have we achieved, where are we going, what are we taking back to the community, so everyone's clear. And, hopefully thinking about pushing Django on the in the future versions. Paolo and I have done this kind of by ourselves this time as a proof of concept. Looks like the proof of concept's going to work, and it's okay.
And you have some, Python Spain is sponsoring, right? You have some
people. Yeah, so Python España is sponsoring, the Django Software Foundation is sponsoring. We've had Button Down have sponsored the newsletter, but the mailing list is, the important communication channel. And then in collaboration as well with the Ayuntamiento de Palafrugell, who provided the venue, which I'm very grateful for. So it's super.
All right. Well, let's talk about being a fellow, because I had a chance to meet you at DjangoCon US and talk about this. But I mean, we could briefly do the full circle, right? So Sarah Boyce is going to be on maternity leave. So then we're going to be down to one or half a fellow, because Natalia is 3 days a week. Carlton, you're on the fellowship committee. Yes.
Fellowship working group. Can't remember what it's called, but yes, I'm on that.
Yeah. So how does it start? And then I'm curious if Jacob can share his perspective, right? So you find out, we need to, Carlton, get a new fellow. How does that, there's a blog post and then you filter 100 submissions, or tell us?
Yeah, okay. So, Sarah obviously knew that she was going to need to step back.
she knew.
Sometime in advance. And so we knew sometime in advance. And then there was a certain amount of, we've got to put out a call for applications, and we need to do that within a certain timescale. You know Django, within a certain timescale is not Django's forte, right? Django is as long as it takes, but we keep going forever. That's Django.
Except the releases. The releases, though, are...
Yeah, no, but the releases have a cadence, right? And, tell us all about that momentarily. Yeah. But we to have to do something in quite a short period of time really is difficult. And then we put out the request, and we had over 100 applications, and they were many of them were just really, really, really super. And so that was quite encouraging, when you that number, but it was a lot to go through. I was handling first contact. I'll just say one more thing and then I'll let Jacob step in. But I was handling the first contact, and my hack was to read the applications as they came in, so that rather than leaving
touch it once. Yeah.
Because 100 all at once is a big lift.
Well, so I was going to say, so obviously you had to pick one person. So, you probably could have picked more if you had the options. But what about Jacob stood out to the committee?
Well,
just to make it awkward for you, Jacob.
You got to understand, Jacob's already got something like 120 commits into Django before even applying for the fellow application. So he's already very involved in the core framework, and he's...
on the team, right? The review.
Been around and been active, and he's very bright. Like, don't tell him I said so, but he's very bright. And he was one of the bunch that we identified in the first round, and then we narrowed it down. And in the end, he was the candidate we made the offer to.
And he accepted, right? I mean, so Jacob, we can get your point of view. What was it like, right? So you sent off the application, but then there's quite a bit of waiting too on your end.
Yeah, I was kind of invited to give some feedback on how the hiring process went, and I acknowledged that, as you can imagine, there were a lot of applications to get through. For me, it didn't feel particularly long. Like, I didn't have a lot of feedback to give, in that respect, that needed to be changed next time. Maybe that's just because of having to adjust to the academic world where job searches take a year. So, right. 6 weeks is pretty good. it must have been a real challenge to look through so many high quality applications. And then, there's a volunteer board and, a small team, people may be in and out on leave and make sure that everybody's comfortable. I'm assuming those were all major factors there.
Yeah, and it came over the Northern Hemisphere summer as well, which is a time when people are taking vacations. And so I don't think it's a secret. I think the hope is to be able to put out and, call for other people in this role in the next year or so to help grow it, and maybe for short-term contracts rather than permanent positions or whatever, but the hope is to continue resourcing this. I think next time we do it, we might need to think about, making that first review phase, having some paid time allocated to it, because, it's difficult. It's difficult to come to a consensus between four or five people when those people are all on volunteer and they've got work. And if there's only 10 applicants, it's a much easier thing. But when there's 100, that's all, hang on.
Okay. So anyway. Well, glad you accepted. I do. We want to talk about Django 6.0, but quickly.
I want to go back. You just said academia, Jacob. So,
I was going to ask him to say quickly his background.
So, I trained. So, I did music and philosophy in undergrad, and then went down the music composition path, music composition and technology, and that's kind of how I caught the programming bug. Like, you meet almost any composer of concert music and they're all dabbling in electronics. It's kind of just an expected part of your bag of tricks. Not Python right at the beginning, but that came later. Also between degrees, I moved to Madison, Wisconsin briefly, and I was working in a QA job at a healthcare tech firm. So it's actually something that I think shaped I didn't know I would go into software eventually. It was just a throwaway job for a year, but coming back to software later, I kind of realized my first time getting my hands in the clay really with software, being in QA, kind of did shape how I think about, that much experience with testing really did shape how I think about software. Did a PhD in music composition, and again, was dabbling in technology along the way. And then had a course in Python and programming techniques during that PhD. And that set me up to, right after my fellowship ended and I needed something lined up, there was a sheet music retailer, that reached out to me. They were looking for somebody who had music theory experience, Python experience, and or software testing experience, actually, primarily, and was local to the Philadelphia area. And I was like, hey, I'm that unicorn. All I had to do was put those keywords in LinkedIn, probably, and get one result. Right. So I ended up there. They were doing this interesting project in creating a better sheet music search engine that wouldn't just search keywords from publisher blurbs, because every publisher wants to tell you that their band medley is the best Christmas medley that's ever been written. That's not useful information. So we were scraping PDFs, trying to extract musical information, try to extract queryable ranges of instrument profiles that band directors could save and performs. And then COVID hit, and that wasn't a moneymaker, and I got redirected to all kinds of other stuff. So anyway, I had a really interesting couple of years as kind of a Python generalist slash project manager slash sort of finger in every pie kind of thing. And it was around that time where the senior developer I was working with had left to go start at Meta. And I realized, like, I need to learn more, right? I'm still pretty junior. I don't have a senior developer looking over my shoulder all the time. And that's honestly when I got involved in Django. Because I thought, you know, I want to learn more about the web. And there's this community where you can get involved. You can volunteer some time working on pull requests and tickets, and you'll get feedback. And so that was kind of how I got involved in Django. And then it just so happened that my next roles after that all involved Django. And so I stayed involved and tried to bring my knowledge of what was going on in Django to those roles and say, hey, we could install this package or extend what we're doing with the ORM. Look how expressive the ORM is these days. Yada, yada, yada.
I always say that contributing to open source is like one of the best ways to level up, one of the best ways to learn.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me. Yeah.
I mean, you get to see quite good code and quite clever people give you feedback, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's what's cool about being a fellow now is that I get to pay some of that forward, hopefully, with luck.
Yeah. And how long you been doing it now? 2 weeks? 2 weeks, something like
that? Yeah, like five weeks, something like that.
5 weeks already. So
one of those was a conference week. I was at DjangoCon US in Chicago, early September. Yeah.
And how are you settling on your feet?
I mean, it's been great. I'm in the lucky position to be able to kind of start in a role where I've been doing many of the tasks before. Obviously, I mean, I hadn't been on the security team before. I hadn't been rolling releases before, but like I'd seen kind of the guts of how Django pull requests and tickets go. So that part was relatively smooth. I should also shout out to Sarah and Natalia and the many people at the DSF who worked very hard to make sure that I had a smooth onboarding. That was great. It's a welcoming community and there's, it's a lot of trust that's bestowed on you kind of right when you start.
But you've already earned that trust, right? You that's the whole point of the hiring process. What's the worst thing that you can do? You know, anyway, Will, you were going to ask about something.
I was just going to ask him to share a little bit about his background. He just did.
Okay.
So,
okay, fine. So, 6.0?
Well, should we? 6.0, I'm sort of excited to talk. Yeah. I mean, so Natalia's going to be the release manager on this. So, you get to watch one. And then I think 6.1, you'll be the release manager for, Jacob. Is that right?
Yep. Be my turn. We just take turns.
So, I don't know, Carlton. We sort of briefly touched upon it, but there's. I don't know what maybe what's interesting to people. I mean, we have two fellows on here, right? Like from the outside, these releases just sort of appear, but it's an immense amount of work to go from feature freeze to release. What should people not know, or what should people know that they don't about, you know, what fellows actually do to get over that line?
Or to give it another way, like, I know you've seen Jacob, I know you've been around and you've seen what's going on and all the rest, but getting that alpha out the door is not quite as smooth as you might think. No?
Yeah, that's it's funny. Like you prioritize things correctly so that you have as much time as you need to deal with any last minute surprises, and then inevitably there's a surprise on the last morning where it's like, oh, you know, is this feature ready to ship? Do we need to document this one thing or back out this one piece? And so yeah, there was just a little bit of last minute hustling to just back out a small part of a feature that we figured wasn't ready for prime time in the
okay test. So I was busy watching from the bleachers, you know, cheering away, but this was Django Tasks was coming in, right? And
yeah,
really, tell us what happened there.
So first of all, I mean, it's a success story. I mean, it's, I think we, you know, it's a DE, it's a Django enhancement proposal that's been around forever, and it's being implemented in phases. So Django 6.0 is going to have the basic interface, and it's going to have the backends for development and testing purposes. So the dummy backend and the immediate backend. I think the database backend is coming in a future version. And I think that was a really smart division of effort. So we just had the plan to merge what I just said, the interface and development testing pieces, into 6.0 for the feature freeze. And I went through multiple rounds of review from lots of people from the community. Obviously, it had been implemented first as a third-party package, and so it had been, it had already matured. Wagtail had already been using it. Others had been using it. Sarah gave it a thorough review. She asked Natalia and myself to give it a thorough review. You know, and Jake Howard led the implementation, did a fantastic job, super responsive. And then, yeah, just the night before the feature freeze, I think it was Simon piped up, said, like, did you remember to check this against multi-database setups? And it's just like, that's the one thing nobody had on their checklist. That, like, you know, and it made me think, like, oh, man, this is just, there needs to just probably be a checklist for every major feature. Just has the integration against every major part of Django been checked? And it's just, we missed multi-databases.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So quick
that's
little
thing about. I should say, good thing. The good thing about being new is you have fresh eyes to this, right? So, like, at least for me, whenever I started at new companies or I had people join my team, I was always like, the first like 2 weeks, write everything down because you're going to get tunnel vision really quickly. But yeah, checklist that's added on by future fellows is a good idea.
Yeah.
Sorry, Carlton.
I was just going to say, so quick little panic, quick little two shuffle, and then, you know, I saw the.
Well, it's great. Everybody volunteered to help. Jake was like, do you need help? Like, he was around that morning watching it. You know, that Natalia had already asked me to prepare the PR so she could approve it and merge it. It's like, but then we had backup there because Jake was ready to help too. So it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the feature freeze went out. The feature freeze happened. I mean, because the there's two bits, right? There's the feature freeze where you say, right, no more's going in. And then there's the alpha. And it's kind of up to the release manager to say, the alpha needs to be a couple of days later. It's like, look, I've got one PR that I'm going to merge, but nothing else. That's okay, but, you know, obviously the expectation and the want is to get it out on that day. So there's a sort of pressure to release it.
Yeah, but I mean, good experience. People should download it, check it out, run their project test suites, report issues.
Had any big ones come in already or not?
Nothing.
Yeah. Nothing. That means no one's been testing it. Come on, focus.
Yeah.
Get up. What you don't want is all the issues to come in the day after the final release, right?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, there's a little bit of lag. Carlton, you go, and then I'll...
Well, I was going to ask, what are you most excited about in 6.0? I mean, we've talked about the headline features. Yeah.
Yeah. If you've covered the headline features, I mean, tasks, yeah, obviously, it's... Having better development and testing tools for tasks is, I think, going to be a huge win for developing. Being able to turn Celery off, it's going to be great. And then just in terms of like deep cuts or minor features, I sort of asked around when I started. I think my approach as a fellow when I started was to just try to close as many open loops as I was already involved in before like taking on new projects. And one of them was a kind of PR that had been sitting in the review queue for ages, and it had been a contributor that was sort of what I think sometimes people call taking the vulture approach, where they take a PR that stalled and then they take up the mantle and try to run it to the finish line. And this is somebody that I'd iterated with as a reviewer before, and I was kind of building expertise in an area I wasn't totally familiar with. It was in Postgres full text search, and it was creating a new expression called Alexine that you can use to sort of safely wrap user input and compose queries with those pieces of user input and negate them and combine them without having to escape everything by hand, which is, you know, complicated enough that it might turn you off from trying to even implement those kinds of features. And so I'm poking around in a, you know, contrib.postgres, an area I don't know very well. And it got as far as I could with it. And so I kind of asked Sarah and Natalia, like, hey, you know, is there any this reviewers or this contributor's been waiting? Can I just try to bring this over the finish line? And they said, yeah, if you have the bandwidth, go for it. And we got it into 6.0 with an assist from a few reviewers at the last minute that were able to sort of validate that we weren't far off from the mark. So so it was cool to be able to land that kind of out of nowhere right before the feature freeze.
Yeah, we weren't expecting one.
Well, as you said, you'd spent so much time on the other side, and now that you're in a position to do some of these things that maybe aren't as publicly visible, but you know that within the people committing code, like that's a big deal. It feels good for them, feels good for you. Like, you know.
Yeah. So I have one more kind of question that I'd like to dig in just on this topic. It's kind of about Django's roadmap and your thoughts on how we go forward. So it always strikes me that every release it knocks it out of the park. You know, go back as far as you want. 4.2, great release. 5.0, great release. 5.1, another great release. 5.2, another great release. We've got another super release coming up this time. And yet, it's all done on volunteer. It's all done on volunteer basis. It's just what happens to be ready at the time. I wonder how you feel about that over the medium term.
You had a blog. You had a forum post on this, Carlton, we'll link to as well, I believe.
Did I? Oh, brilliant. Okay.
Didn't you?
I might have done.
Yeah, you did. Because you asked, sorry, because it's behind the scenes. I'm pretty sure you posted something and then you asked me to jump in and, you know, boost it or something. One of us is losing our mind here. Sorry. Go ahead, Jacob.
I mean, it's a tough question because it's on the one hand, it feels like it's risky. You know, like, how can you depend on contributions from volunteers and to be able to ensure that something is ready enough to merge? On the other hand, it's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, Django's really lucky that it doesn't have like this, you know, invisible hand of corporate money behind it, like telling it what to do. Like, that's very good for Django. I'm not saying you should change anything at all in that respect. And I think, you know, if this success is going to continue, if we're going to still have great feature release after great feature release, it's going to depend on people who just believe that, you know, new features and new and important features can still land in Django. Like, it's not that we're closed for new features. I've seen that on Reddit. I've seen a post like, oh, you can contribute to Django, but they just do bug fixes. Like, you got to understand, you know, no new features really. And
but that's Reddit in a nutshell, isn't it? Like, because
it is.
Get the major releases and go, well, that, look at those and look at those and look at those and look at those.
That's true. And that I just, for people listening to this podcast, it's like, if you hear your coworkers talking that way, like, just, I think that's my answer to your question. It's going to take people continuing to push back against that idea for the success to keep happening.
I mean, people need to go on the forum. Like, I mean, Reddit, I'm on Reddit responding to stuff, but like, you're only usually at a negative extreme if you're doing stuff on Reddit. There's some signal there, but it's a lot of noise. I would say, right, if you go hop in the Django forum and you're still finding people pretty riled up about something, that's a good signal, because that's a self-regulating community and that's where more quality happens.
So the reason I'm interested is because with Django on the Med, we're going to do the roadmap workshop, and the idea is to come out with some sort of key things that, you know, we can take back to the community and say, these were the ideas that were raised at the workshop, but then do a teeny bit more and kind of break them down a little bit so that they're addressable to contributors. In you know, the example I keep giving is modernized contrib auth, right? That's just too big. You can't do that, but to break it down and maybe, you know, do a survey of the available two-factor auth options in the community so that, you know, we've got a starting point. Well, that's really addressable to a potential contributor. And I think if we can identify those and, you know, help to identify addressable things, then we can, it's not that we haven't got contributors, we've got lots of volunteers. And it's guiding them to things that the community wants to see go forward. And that's kind of independent, I think, of having a big corporate sponsor who's paying for things to get done.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to see you lead those, or, you know, I'm excited to see those unfold at the sprints in Spain and then to see that disseminated in the community.
I mean, part of it's been historically, I think part of the this perception has been that we haven't had a visible roadmap. We haven't had anything where we're saying, look, these are the things we're working towards. I don't know. Anyway, that was kind of what I wanted to ask you about.
Is anything about APIs going to come up? Because that was one of the takeaways from DjangoCon US.
Yeah, I would imagine that will get raised. I mean,
nothing more to say on it right now.
Well, I fired off last time, Jacob. What do you think?
I think it's time. I'm glad that we're not just ignoring it. I think I'm eager to see how much we can do with less, I guess. Are there forgotten bits of Django that we can build upon? you know, that leverage parts of, I don't know, doesn't require ingesting a whole new apparatus. And honestly, speaking from my own personal experience, like, I can't answer that question. I'd love to sit down and play. And I don't have time during the week as a fellow to just, sit down and play. At least not right now, not this week. So I'm excited to see what other people are going to come up with.
Just on that, actually, this week there was some discussion again on Mastodon, and Emma, who's on the steering council, she put out a proof of concept around the blog post that she'd written on.
I remember that post.
So there's a little package called Django REST 2, I think it's called, and it's tiny. It's lovely. It's got like a list view and a crate view, and you know, it's got all the sort of CRUD views, and it's got a serialization method. But if you go in, there's almost no code to it. And it's like, oh, that's kind of quite interesting, because it's not, it's like, I said to her that I liked it because it was like Fine CMS versus, say, Wagtail or Django CMSs. You've got these giant CMS packages, and then you've got something that's much more minimal that, you know, it just works with the Django admin. Well, the same here. It's like, this is a REST solution that works with very little resource beyond what Django already provides, to talk, you know, to your point about looking for something more minimal. So I was excited about that.
Okay.
So you just said, I'm going to bump in one more question, because you just said, and I really am going to let Russ, you just said about not having time to potter on things during the week now.
Pick up on that.
It's like, how are you finding that aspect? Because the federal role can kind of consume you. There's so many tickets, so many issues, so many things going on.
I guess the other side of that argument, I guess you could suggest that, like, okay, you can't be effective in your role unless you allow yourself enough time for professional development and have a play with something you need to have a play with. And I would say, sure, that's the feeling I came out of DjangoCon US with, which is that, like, oh, I need to spend 45 minutes playing with this and 45 minutes playing with this just to, you know, keep up with the conversation. And so there's a time and a place for that. And I think it's going to come. But also, it's like, I've started in the new role. We've got a backlog we want to start hacking away at. I just kind of feel like that's the first part of my tenure. That's the part I want to focus on. And maybe down the road, there'll be time for, Carlton, you're talking about guiding contributors. If guiding contributors effectively means having a play or just, doing a survey of the tools out there. I mean, I don't know, maybe conferences are also good places where that happens. Like, speaking with people at DjangoCon US, I didn't realize that the force or weight of opinions people have about things like DRF. Like, I knew people had opinions. I didn't know they had opinions about it. that was just interesting feedback to gather, you know, just the sheer weight of those emotions.
I mean, there aren't many things that Django Nort will go to war over, but DRF, that's one of them.
Yeah, that was news to me.
Well, Will, you were there with Jacob at DjangoCon US. So,
yeah. You know. Yeah. No, I mean, I was feeling a little, you know, deja vu all over again, because seeing Jacob be the new fellow and, you know, go around the sprints, I want to ask you about that. But also, I remember, I guess, Natalia and Sarah, when they became fellows, seeing you kind of pass off the baton, Carlton, in a sense, and then seeing them, you know, not pass it off, but also try to, you know, bring Jacob in. And so I was having definitely, like, you know, it's like two, you know, sliding doors or something, right? Like, or maybe that's not the wrong analogy, but like two versions of the same thing.
The circle of life.
Circle of life. No, but I think it was good. I mean, I hope it was good for you, Jacob, right? I mean, I think that's the thing that you knew, but now you really know, is just how much trust and autonomy is placed in you as a fellow. I mean, I know Natalia in particular, coming from a corporate environment, you know, still is like, well, who's... you know, who's the manager? And it's like, well, you know, it, you know, so a lot of these questions have to kind of come within, you know, how do I find time to be playful, right? Like, I mean, I struggle with this in my own job, right? The irony is, like, I'm a developer advocate talking about code all day, but how much time do I have to actually spend 3-4 hours playing with something? You know, I'm getting better at doing that. So yeah, I was just interesting to see. And I think you quickly picked up on it, right? Because a lot of the questions you had, Natalia also had, and it's kind of like, well, you know, I probably even said, like, off the cuff to you, you know, in a way, as long as people online are relatively happy and the fellows committee is kind of happy, it's really on you to define the role how you want. Like, there's tremendous trust. unless you screw up.
Then you're at us.
Then you just boom.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the point is of that. I guess it was interesting for me just seeing you go through that. And I hope that you had a chance to meet as many people as possible, because I know you'd been to DjangoCon Europe, but even at a DjangoCon US, not everyone knows how the fellows work, right? Even among those 300 people, it's still kind of a,
mysterious. I didn't come anywhere close to meeting everyone. And I wish I had met more people, and next time I'll rectify that. But I met as many people as I could. And
Well, now they're going to come up to you and pigeonhole you and be like,
open invitation.
Carlton knows.
Well, but you must have done better than the N+1 rule, right? So the N+1 rule is that for each DjangoCon you've been to, that's N. And then each day you have to meet N+1 new people. Now that's okay if it's your first one. On your first one, you've got to meet two people a day. You can do that. But if you're like Russell Keith McGee and you've been to 20 of the things, it starts to get quite difficult.
Carlton, mid-roll, we have to shout out to Hacksoft.
Okay. Hacksoft is your development partner beyond code. From custom software development to consulting, team augmentation, or opening an office in Bulgaria, they're ready to take your Django project to the next level.
Yes. And thank you, Hacksoft, for being a sponsor. Helps us do this.
Absolutely.
Switching slightly. So, Jacob, what do you want to ask the community, right? Because I think there's a lot put upon the fellows, but you probably already see, are there things people can do with tickets or just online engagement? Like, how can people help you and the fellows? Because I don't think that question is asked much.
Yeah. I guess my loosey-goosey first answer I already hinted at, which is it's just to like stay positive and like continue to believe that like we do, that discussions will come to a resolution, that features will land in Django, right? So not to be discouraged and take your energy elsewhere, but to like stay engaged, look at a discussion and try to determine what would move that discussion forward, and then just be that person instead of waiting for. I mean, because it's funny, you just said like even the fellows ask questions like, "Who's the manager?" And it's like there isn't one, So the same thing goes for contributors. Like, be that project manager, right? Help resolve the blockers. Don't just wait for somebody else to, outline the blueprints. Like, help make the blueprint with us.
Yeah. Well, there is, it may not feel like it, but there's way more structure than there used to be. I mean, because now there's a board member, and here we come to the show, Jeff Triplett, so that was one of the things people said at DjangoCon. They're like, the drinking game. I forget who said it. Was it you, Jacob? Someone said, I have to mention PyCharm, and we have to mention Jeff Triplett as our Django bingo. But Jeff is the official fellow liaison with the board. In some capacity, right? So he checks in.
Yeah. No, we have great open lines of communication. Andrew got this on a regular basis to just hear how things are going, and also to play that role of trying to remove blockers if there are blockers that are slowing us down. And so it's great to have that support. So yeah, I think speaking for myself only, I feel supported, and I believe the other fellows feel totally supported right now.
Which is great. I mean, and I think just before that, when I was on the board, and I would literally text Carlton the day before a monthly meeting, being like, "How's it going? Any requests? You and Marish, let us know." So there was some, but it was pretty much that, right, Carlton? And most of the time, you're like, "Yeah, we're good."
Informal back channel. And I think what's nice about the structure coming in is it's a little bit more specified. It's a little bit more. I mean, this is mainly Natalia who's been driving this, and it's a big credit to her. And I've been really impressed with the way she's seen the lack of how Florian Apollinar described it as a YOLO approach that we have. And he's right. It's a kind of, and it's just been the way it's always been. So we've always just kind of got on and done it, and it's been fine. But Natalia's come in and she's been like, "No, that's not fine, because that's not great for onboarding. It's not great for continuity. It's not great for, and she's absolutely right. And she's identified issues one by one and ticked them off as trying to make them better. So, just constantly impressed by Natalia's professionalism. But yeah, it used to be you text me and I text you, and we'd be like, why did we have that back channel to the board? Well, because we did the podcast, but it shouldn't rely.
Right. Why
only employees own or own, not employees, but only paid work that's on Django is right. Only route of communication to the board goes because we happen to do the podcast. Like that's.
Well, right. Because we would have, I think people don't, if people know about the fellows and the board, they don't realize that they really handle different areas. And there's some people who overlap on both, but they're meant to handle different things. So part of that started, Carlton, because we would have multiple times where, yeah, no one was really in charge of the fellows. You know, it was like, what do the fellows think? I don't know. Like, you know, that's kind of why I got in the habit of asking you.
And I'm hopeful the steering council now, because there was no steering council role. There was a steering council. It wasn't doing anything. And for the entire time, there was no guidance coming through and no communication with the community. And I think what we're trying to do on the steering council is kind of get that going. And if we can establish that in our tenure and hand that off to the next steering council as something that exists, then there should be much more structure combined with, you know, fellows having proper management and proper guidance. And then a steering council that's actually helping to steer the technical direction, and then the board can do its thing without there being these kind of gaps. But it was back when Marish and I were doing it, it was Marish and I, and the board organized, the board did the board bits, but there was no other structure.
I do want to mention too the weekly fellow reports that are put on the forum that We Jeff and I put in the Django News newsletter, and I've committed to, you know, we talked about this at DjangoCon US actually, right? Like, because the fellows take quite a bit of time to list, you know, reviewed, triaged, authored, talked about, and some people see those, but I think they put more time into them than maybe people see. And so one of our actually dinner conversations, I think Jacob, right, with Natalia was, you know, hey, if there's a couple sentences that can just go in the newsletter as sort of like the headline, and then we'll
and then I stiffed you last week. I didn't give you.
Well, that's I saw that. That's okay. I went in to look, and I was like, oh wait, like.
No, it was a potpourri week. It was a post. It was I became addicted to watching the queue go down after the conference, right? So it's just hacking away at miscellaneous.
Yeah. I'm not committing to putting it in all the time, but I do. I try to, and you know, Natalia, of course, was like, "Okay, you're going to do it. You're going to do it." And I was like, "Yes, like, oh, if you write a paragraph, I'll put it in there." So I try to look.
You talked about the queues there, Jacob. So I would, you know, my day would start as a fellow, crack open dashboard.djangoproject.com and look at the numbers and like, oh, there's a number of your ticket. Quick, get on that. There's a, you know, 32 PRs needing to review. Right, let's see if we can pull that down. It's kind of like a slight little bit of gamification. It just needs a few animations and some. Let's go.
Yeah. Are you volunteering to add some? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yeah, no, I think that would be a good addition to help stimulate the fellow's enthusiasm for, you know, their task is to little, you know, stars when they mark a ticket as ready for commit.
So we're going to ask you the magic wand question, Jacob, but I'll give you time to think about that. I want to just mention one thing. So what would you magic wand to change anything about Django? Right. So you can mull on that as I say something else, which is, I think maybe the thing I'm most.
Sorry.
Is that too much for you?
No. Django, the repository, Django, the community.
All of it.
Your magic wand, mate.
Okay.
You make the rules, right?
Yeah.
One of the things I'm maybe most excited about, or not excited about, but I'm pleased to see is that in the Django News newsletter, there's a updates to Django section, which Sarah Boyce initially started, and now members of the Django Not space often come in and do, where they'll say, you know, we had X many pull requests merged in and do a little description. And I know that, like, I don't live in track. Like, I don't always see, like, that's my entryway in to see every week. Oh, you know, there was 10, 15, whatever number of tickets handled. And so I'm personally really, I kind of feel like I wish we had more visibility to that point of how dynamic Django is on the inside. Again, it's double digit basically every week are merged in. And so maybe I should go on Reddit and find that post and link to them. But I'm really pleased about that. I think we could do more with it, but I think it, even within Django, like there's people, you know, if you're on the review and triage committee, like you're seeing it, but then, and I think this was Sarah's like sort of insight was like, well, people aren't even seeing that level, let alone, you know, bubbling up to like a major feature in a feature release. So I'm really happy about that. And I'm open to ideas on how to shine a light, I guess, more on that around. So both you, the fellows, you all just slamming through so many tickets every week. And then also things actually being merged in. So how do we disabuse people of that notion that nothing's changing? Because, you know, stuff is changing. Anyways. Magic wand. So that's my magic wand. Just to shine a spotlight. Now your turn, Jacob. Anything goes.
Testers. We need more and early testers, you know, and more of a culture of testing. More of a culture of like, I'm running my project suite. I'm writing enough tests to cover the functionality that's mission critical for me, and I'm testing against the alpha, and my dependency isn't ready, and I'm letting them know, you know. And it's the same thing that goes for the community. It's like when you're interacting on the repository, you want people to be aware of who they're blocking, and to try not to be the blocker. And if you're a third-party package, the same thing goes. It's like you shouldn't be the blocker that prevents your users from testing against Django 6 beta or whatever, and that maybe somebody needs to let you know that you're the blocker, and that person might be you running your project test suite. So just, I mean, we talked about this earlier, you know, Carlton's saying it's going to be the day after the release and you're going to start getting bugs rolling in about Django 6. And it's like, yeah, that's what I would, setting that awareness, setting that intention that, you know, this is just a normal part of developing a Django project to test against the pre-releases when they're ready.
I mean, if it's any incentive to people listening, like, the fellows do keep a mental note of who reported the bugs during the alphas or during the pre-release and who reported them the week after the final release, right? They know. And they're like, oh, yeah, you're that one. Yeah, same again, is it? Okay.
You just need that external list, Carlton, to share with, oh, here we go.
No. It's not like, you know, it's not like the Knox list. We're not going to, you know, but it's, you know who's testing and who isn't. And it's not about reputation. It's about being involved, and like if you're turning up during the pre-release with a bug report, look, I've run this on my test suite, I've got this regression, that makes you known, and it's, you know, it gets you into the community, right? It gets you it makes you a contributor in a way that turning up the week afterwards, it's not quite the same, just isn't.
Also, there's a huge self-interested reason to report it early. It's like, we'll fix it before the release. But yeah.
Well, one thing on testing, well, I'll put a link to it. I've been struck by there was a recent article on epic.ai talking about so these benchmarks for LLMs. And one is Suibench Verified, which is largely around Python projects. But this is one of like the big, when you see like percentage, you know, Sonnet 4.5 is 90% and GPT-4 is, you know, 70% or whatever. It's 46.2% of it is Django, is like LLMs testing against Django. Like, it's not even, there's probably, if I was smarter, there's a way I could show it on the screen for video. We'll do that in the future. But it's, you know, Django is just there and has these testing suites and other people are testing against it, sort of. But it's not like there's not tests in Django.
Can I ask a question about that, Will? I saw Adam Johnson tweet about this, that the LLMs were cheating. They checked out the repo, and then they were using the Git log history to find the commits by Mariusz to solve.
They're just Mariusz AI. Yeah. No, totally.
Let this be a lesson, right? Shorter and less useful commit messages all the time.
Yeah. I'm debating if I can. Should I try to? We'll just try it.
You go, no, risk it. Come on, let's see if we can get this software to work.
I don't want
to
share image file. Oh, okay. Hold on one second. Let me save image as. See, we're just learning. We're doing it live. Boom, boom, boom. Nope, not that. Here we go. Okay.
Well, you did. I did remember the issue that I opened a discussion on the forum about.
Hey, look at that.
Well done.
Who's got game? So we'll put a link to it. But this is, so again, the Suite Verified, Suite Bench Verified, you know, and it's, so the point of the author, I think, was like, you know, it's pretty low diversity of code bases testing this. But, you know, I mean, why is Flask 0.2%? Where's Fast API? Anyways, interesting.
But is this one of the reasons why these tools are supposedly very good with Django? Is because they're kind of almost trained against.
Yeah, well, and Simon Willison has talked about this a lot. I mean, because Django is 20 years old, because it's so well documented, because it's so established, it's just sitting there, right? So it's as mature as any code base is. All right, look at that. All right, oops, now we're in the wrong.
Here we are. There we are. I quite like the mixing it up there. I was just saying, I remembered the issue that you were talking about. I opened a discussion about whether we should change Django's versioning number. One idea I just put it as like, well, we could use a calver, because I think the problem people have, and I see it after the 0.0 release, and the point, that's what sort of made me think of it again, was that 6.0 will come out, and it's no different than 5.3. It's not like a major version in the semantic version in sense of it. And so we go 0.0, 0.1, 0.2, and that's the LTS. And that's the cycle. And it has significance, but you have to know quite a lot of Django before that becomes meaningful to you. And I know, Will, you've talked about this. This is why I asked you to comment, is that your books, people, they're 5.2 ready, and people are like, oh, but what about 6.0? It's like, but 6.0 is the same as 5.2 in almost all ways.
Yes. I mean, you're just scratching my scab. It's not just me. It's any content creator for Django, and there's not many of us. It's too much to have to update every 8 months.
But you also don't need to, right? Because nothing's changed in 8 months. Like, not nothing.
Effectively nothing.
A learning Django book, learn Django book.
Yeah.
That's not changed in 8 months.
Django hasn't changed that much. I updated a lot, but yeah, Django hasn't changed. But yeah, I can tell when someone writes in, some issue, oh, this isn't working. I'm like, oh, you're on the, I can tell which version or pirated version they're on. But it doesn't change that much. It almost never changes. There's like one small thing that, and I'll usually do a blog, I'll do a tutorial on it. And if they just search for it, they can find it. But yeah, it's incredibly stable. And I don't know, look at Python, right? Like, I'm not saying Python's perfect with like every year is like 314, 315, 316, but it does present a feeling of stability, even as we know there's some Python releases that are a lot bigger than others, like 3.6 with F strings, right? Like, they're not all created equal, I would say, from the outside. Maybe Hugo feels differently, but anyways, yeah, I'm in favor of it. I mean, I've sort of given up on trying to push that boulder up the hill. But
there was a good discussion. There wasn't any, I think, given the discussion, I think probably the status quo until someone comes up with a better idea, but
acknowledgement of it being, Carlton and I, we're going to do an episode on the Django survey results, which come out soon. But one thing, again, I think it was 4,500 people. So it's not the whole community, but it's quite a lot of people. 83%, something like that, claimed they were on the latest version of Django. So not even the LTS, like the latest version. That feels high to me. But I think it's great if at least 4,500 people are doing that. Right. So maybe, I don't know. The LTS thing is great, but it's a real, you will find, Jacob, it's a real burden for the fellows to support for 3 years. If it's not already apparent.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Django's benefited from a really clear backport policy. So the more we can just sort of direct reporters to the policy, take some of the heat off.
Yeah. All right. So I think we're at our books and projects stage of the show. So this is optional, Jacob. You're not required. Carlton and I are trying to start a new thing. So I'll go first. Project, I want to shout out Django Watch Files from Adam Johnson. So this just came out recently. So Run Server, it auto reloads and it goes through the whole file system. And Watch Files is a faster written in Rust way to do it. And so he implemented, this is a third-party package. So basically just refreshes faster, I think it's fair to say. And works. Yes, Carlton, go ahead.
Just not just faster, it uses way less CPU to do so.
Oh, sorry, and, I forget. Yeah.
And so the key point there is if you're developing on battery, that is going to make a massive difference to the amount of time you can develop with versus the built-in stat file stat run server, which you're probably going to use 10% CPU, which is, it's just ticking away, burning your battery all the time, whereas the watch fast approach is much more efficient. So I think it's worth giving it a go.
And so people should use it. And I think he even mentioned if it picks up momentum, that could, just like Django template partials, maybe make its way into core. It seems like the perfect kind of thing to just incrementally improve Django. Anyway, so I've been using that. That's cool. Carlton, do you have a project?
Yeah, I do. It's another one from Google Summer of Code this year. It's another one that we'd like to have in core. You know, we don't want to experiment in core. We want to, you know, test things out. So it's Rafi Khan, who was part of Google Summer Code, did Django admin key shortcuts. So the keyboard shortcuts for Django admin. And it's lovely looking package. It's small. It's lovely to play with. But we need people to test it and feedback and get some community engagement with it to make sure that it's stable enough and all the rest of it. And whether the design decisions are right and all those other questions that to start using it, play with it. Do you like it? Is it, are there bugs? Are there issues? Are the keyboard shortcuts defined correctly? Do they clash with other keyboard shortcuts that you've come across? Are you able to define your own custom ones in the way you want to? These kind of, you know, is it right? I think it's would be a lovely package to merge in for accessibility and usability around the admin, which is probably one of the main reasons why people use Django. And so I really recommend people trying that out. We do need the community feedback on that.
Yeah, there's a nice Django blog on it, which I missed. I must admit, DjangoCon, that we'll link to September 4th. Jacob, did you have one? You don't have to, but...
Yeah. No, I did think of something. I was recently on a project that had a lot of SQL objects that needed to be managed, and we started using Django PG Trigger. Great. But we had other things that weren't Postgres triggers. So I was looking around for something that would act like that. It would be able to calculate forward and reverse migrations from a single source of truth instead of spraying your 150 line forward migration for deploying this, you know, hefty object, and then your another 150 line string for the reverse migration, and now your migration file is unreadable. You have several versions. I was like, there's got to be something in the community for this. And there was this old solution in the community that's recently been forked to be tested against recent Django and Pythons called Django Migrate SQL. I think the fork is Django Migrate SQL 2. And you just put in your install apps and it just works. And now we've got like real clean Git diffs on our, on your 159 Postgres functions.
Also, as well, you've actually got backwards migrations, right? Because you talk about that 159 backwards migration as if it was real, as if you'd actually written it.
create and replace, and then the same exact thing. And then you're trying to figure out what's different about this. And you end up
Oh, wow. It only has four stars.
It's a sleeper. Yeah. I think Bruno Allo is maintaining it now.
Yes, I think so.
Prevented us from putting SQL files into timestamp folders. And I was like, no, we're not. We got to use Django for this. And I was just pleased to see that somebody has solved this problem.
Okay, that's a super one. I'm going to check that out.
Wow. Carlton, book. You have a book.
Yeah, I do. So I'm going to recommend software. Can you see that on the?
Oh, I have a copy of that because you.
Software Design by Example, by Greg Wilson. It's a fantastic book. I gave this a review in my very first Stack Report, which is my newsletter that I do monthly. The very first issue was a review of this, raving about it because I just got it, and I picked it up again recently, so a year or so later, and I'm just like amazed by it again. There's just so much depth in it, and the more time I spend with it, the more I find. And I think it's not so much in the book. I'm finding more in it, if that makes sense. It's not that I didn't read it. It's that my take on the exercise, the examples have gone. So the big ideas, it talks about complexity and how you manage complexity, and then the appropriate abstraction level for the complexity of your app that you're at, which is just really wonderful. But then the examples of like how classes work, really, and things like row orientated versus column orientated storage, which is one of the kind of really fundamental, like, why do I need to do it this way to get when I'm doing this kind of activity questions? Why do I need to lay my data out in this format? And you build your examples of just Python dicks and small things, but that gives you a massive insight that you kind of previously wouldn't have. And I think it's a wonderful book, and I really do recommend it. It's also freely available online if you don't want to buy a print copy, but I'm a print copy.
Yeah. Do you have one, Jacob, or are you taking?
Yeah, I guess to go outside of software, I was had a pleasant surprise of encountering this book from approximately 1950 by Simone de Beauvoir about her travels in the United States called America Day by Day. I bought it as a lark in a used bookstore for a friend who had it's funny. We were visiting this curated bookstore, you know, where everything is, you know, just so. And the person running the store had said, like, no, we don't have travel writing. And it's like, you know, I wasn't asking for the Lonely Planet's Guide to Italy. Like, I was asking for like memoir or something like that. I went back and I found this on the shelf. And I was like, look, they do have travel writing. Here it is. And so I just got it just kind of as a lark. And then I popped it open this summer and I couldn't put it down. It feels like it could have been written yesterday. You know, America's going through a red scare at the time, and now we're going through a blue scare. Comments about youth, you know, and what's possible. And so anyway, if you like good prose on travel and on America, recommend.
Okay.
Wow. Awesome. Mine is a short one. Hunting Game. Oop. There we go. So Justin Duke of Button Down actually sent this to me because he was recommending it. We got on a whole kick talking about books and Japanese literature and Murakami. And yeah, it's mid-century, really well written. There's something about like really good Japanese novelists. I don't know why exactly Japanese translates in such an interesting but still good way to English. I'm sure it has to do with the translator, but it's really, it's very, I don't know, very Japanese, very sort of like almost English in a way, Carlton, like very like things not said, but implied.
Yeah, that should be on the bingo card as well, to be honest.
So anyways, I'm enjoying it. It's more about the writing than I think the topic. It's about like a love affair and stuff. So yeah, I can't, unlike Carlton, I can't always read software books to fall asleep at night. Sometimes I mix it up.
Well, but the software books are the best thing to put you to sleep at night because they're really, really boring.
Sometimes. All right. Did we miss anything? I think we've covered most of our stuff. Anything? Well, Jacob, anything we didn't ask you or you want to say? Well,
no. I mean, thanks for having me on. It's been, you know, an exciting first few weeks as a fellow, and now even more exciting being on this podcast. So thanks for inviting me in.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on. And we'll just say this episode again was sponsored by Hacksoft. Your Django development partner, Beyond Code. Learn more about their services in the description. And thank you for sponsoring. And thank you, everyone. Next time we've got some really good guests coming up. We won't give it away, Carlton, but we've got some really good guests coming up. You know who I'm talking about.
I have no idea. I'm excited too. No, I do know. You just jogged my memory. I wasn't thinking about it at all. So when you said it, I was like, I don't know who's coming up, but then yes, I've never thought that we have got some good ones.
Okay. So we're at djangochat.com and on YouTube. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
See you next time. Bye-bye.